All right, welcome to the Free Stretch. It is the week 10 edition of the show. It is last minute victory edition of the show. I'm Bobby Fenton, and this is JoeBucksFan.com, and thank you for joining us. And it's a happier mood, obviously, with the Bucks coming off of a win, I guess. I mean, certainly if you look at what the Bucks were staring in the face there with just a few minutes to go in that game, not just for that game, but for their season, it had a chance to really start going off the rails. My question to you guys, and the thing I'm going to try to address on today's show, is that happening anyway? And did this win on Sunday mask a lot of the issues that we know still exist? But when you win, and especially when it's an exciting fashion like that, can you look the other way, or can you convince yourself, hey, maybe it's a turning point, maybe we're on the upswing? I will say this, and we're going to get into it on the show today. Nothing, and I mean nothing about that game, save from the final drive, made me feel anything except further pending doom. And I don't want to say maybe dread, as too strong of a word, but nothing about that game made me feel anything optimistic about what's left to go in 2022. And they got the win. They're 4-5 instead of 3-6. We all know that's a huge difference. I mean, every win-loss hypothetical is a huge difference, but I went to the game. I actually was fortunate enough to be able to go on Sunday. And during the game, as I was watching the whole thing unfold, I was pretty convinced we were about to see, I don't want to say like major change. I felt like something was going to go down in the bye week, or and it still could, but we still have the Seattle game in Germany on Sunday, which we're going to talk about too. But it was bordering upon untenable. I think it is untenable personally, but it was bordering upon what I felt was untenable for the Glazers. And then they come back and win. It's okay, well, you know, good win. Let's go get them next week, and everything kind of stabilizes there. But the Bucks are in a bad way right now, okay? Offensively, they have a top 10 defense. And not that the defense has been perfect, but overall, week after week after week, the point totals don't lie. This defense puts the team in position to win, and the offense fails to get it done. They were able to do it on Sunday, and for all the things Buccaneer-related we're going to talk about on today's show, to me, the first thing you have to look at with that game is I literally cannot believe, and I mean I literally cannot believe the Rams effed that up as badly as they did. Like, that is an absolutely atrocious, that's one of the worst losses of the NFL season by any team, okay? And for the Rams to do that, I have no idea how they allowed it to happen. You know, it was one, they get one first down, first of all, even after they stopped the Bucs on what seemed like their final attempt, and the Bucs had to give it back to them. Bucs had two timeouts at the time, if you remember. And the Rams, it was inside the two-minute warning. The Rams get one first down. It's over. If the Bucs, even with two timeouts, can stop them, even if they run some clock on that one play where they can't stop the play clock, they can't get it all the way down. So that's what happened. I remember Cooper Kupp running that end around, and he very smartly slid to stay in bounds instead of going out of bounds to stop the clock for the Bucs. But he also didn't get any more yards. He didn't really want to get any more yards, just wanted to not go out of bounds. And I don't know if he would have gotten the first down, but right when that happened, I looked up at the clock and I said, huh? And there was a bunch of people leaving early, which, folks, if you've stayed for a game for that long, I get leaving early, you know, if you have certain things going on or whatever, or something comes up. But if you stayed with a game that long and you can do any math in your head and you see the Bucks might get the ball back, is it really that important to leave early, you know, to beat a little bit of traffic? You never know what's going to happen. But a bunch of people did. But I was like, huh? You know, and I had no confidence the Bucks would actually score, mind you. I admit that. But I said, oh, they might actually get the ball back, and they did. So when they got the ball back, it was under 1 minute to go in the football game, down by more than a field goal, so they needed a touchdown, not just a field goal, starting in their own territory, no timeouts left. That situation has come up before this past Sunday 499 times since the year 2000. That exact situation, okay? This is a real stat. Final minute of the game, down by between 4 and 8 points, so more than a field goal, but still within a touchdown. Get the ball back starting in your own territory with less than a minute left and no timeouts left. That was the 500th time that's happened since 2000. What is the record of teams in that situation before Sunday? 4-495. It is now 5-495, thanks to Tom Brady and the offense somehow pulling it together. But are you kidding? I mean, and listen, if you had told me to guess, I would have guessed, you know, obviously you don't think a team has a good record in that situation, but I would have guessed, oh, maybe 10% or something like that. Like, 1%? I mean, the reason is because it was surprising, but not that. Like, once they got the ball back, I felt like they could score, like, even as bad as their offense had been. I would never have guessed it was that unlikely statistically. But it was. Teams in the Bucs situation before that game, as Tom Brady trotted out on the field with less than a minute left, were 4-195. And even Brady, for all the fourth quarter comebacks he's had, he'd never done that. And then I'm watching the Rams defense, and the first play they hit to Kate Otten was really a big play. Put him in Rams territory. But they're still a long way from home, all right? And again, a field goal won't do it. They need touchdowns. And now you've got, you know, even, what were they on the 40-yard line? No timeouts, clock's running. And if you're the Rams, all you have to, now I make it sound easy, because I know you cover one part of the field, another part of the field comes open. But they're playing way off of guys like Scotty Miller. I know he had a tough drop in the end zone the previous drive, but he's still dangerous. They're way off of him, and I know, you know, he's fast, so maybe they don't want to get beat deep like the Packers did before halftime in the NFC Championship. But you can't just stand there and watch him catch balls underneath you on the sideline. Like, they were letting the Bucs throw deep outs to the sideline. Hey, here, take 12, 15 yards and get out of bounds. Go for it. That is exactly the only thing that we, like, they could have given us stuff in the middle of the field and it wouldn't have been enough for us. Like, the Bucs wouldn't have been able to, even if they hit some of those passes in the middle of the field, you're coming up to the line, you're trying to spike it, clocks tick. You can't do it. Like, the Bucs would not have been able to do it. The only way the Bucs win that game is for the Rams to give them what they gave them. And I have no idea. Like, again, I don't want to take credit away from the Bucs, but I'm always watching these games, and I'm always really focused on teams controlling what they can control. Because sometimes you get beat, and I've said this every week on the show, I find a way to work this into the show. But it's true in the NFL, it's true in college, it's true all the way down to, like, my Little League Baseball team, which I say every week, don't I? There's things that you lose because the other guy did it better, okay? Hey, can't complain about that. But the stuff you control, you should do that perfectly. Like, there's nobody stopping you. So it's not like the Bucs just went out and flat out did it better. The Rams let them. And it's mind-boggling. You see this stuff week after week, and we saw it even on Sunday with the Bucs too. I thought there were some questionable decisions. Now, it turns out, we're talking about it here and coming up, but I thought kicking a field goal down by 7 points on 4th-and-3 was absolute madness, because it doesn't even change. If you're down by 6, I get it, because now all you need is another field goal. But down by 7, you need a touchdown. Now you're down by 3, now you still need a touchdown. Nothing has changed. Only now, if you score, you don't have to go to overtime. But you don't have the luxury of thinking that way to me. And I was actually surprised the win percentage or win probabilities, it was the wrong decision. Your win probability is higher if you go for that there, but it was only by like 1% or 2%. I thought it'd be more. But anyway, horrible, horrible, horrible loss and horrible job by the Rams, but the Bucs took advantage of it, and they got it done. So here we are now with that touchdown on the final drive of the game. That put the Bucs at 4 total touchdowns in their last 44 drives. 4 total touchdowns, which used to be in like a period of 5 or 6 drives, 4 total touchdowns in 44 drives. It's the worst stretch going on in the NFL right now. And what we're witnessing is an offense that's completely broken. And the reasons for it, you know, there's a variety of them. We've talked about several of them already on previous shows. One thing I'm noticing more of, and it seems more pronounced, and I don't know if this is Tom Brady requesting it be this way. Maybe, you know, part of him wanting to come back was doing it under the condition he's not going to get drilled in the pocket over and over and over. But there's this game I used to play, and follow me on this for a second. There's this game I used to play when I was a kid. I still do it sometimes when I'm bored. Now you got to use your cell phone for it. But a game I used to play when I was a kid had a little stopwatch. You know, it was one of my, I don't say toys, but I remember having a little stopwatch. And so when I'd get bored, I'd grab the stopwatch and I would push the button to start it. And I'd try to go boop, boop. And I'd try and push the button twice and see how quickly, like see how low of a time I could get on the stopwatch. If I could hit the button a second time within like 1/10 of a second or 2/10 of a second of hitting it the first time. Like that's what I just go boom, boom. I'd see what the lowest time I could stop a stopwatch was basically. That's what watching our passing game feels like. It feels like Tom Brady gets the ball, that leather touches his fingertips. Oh, I gotta throw it. Like, note, watch that with the Bucs offense. Try and see if you notice. Like, every time we throw the ball, it's like the ball is a hot potato or a detonator. And if Tom Brady holds it for more than 1/2 of 1 second, it's gonna nuke the entire planet. He's gotta get rid of it. Like, you cannot get the ball downfield that way. And I'm not saying we need to have, you know, 5- and 7-step drops or anything over here. But every pass, like, they're basically glorified running plays. Like, okay, we're not going to literally hand it off, but take the snap. Okay, throw it! You know, like, throw it as fast as you can. Doesn't matter. Just throw it. And we're throwing little quick screens. We're throwing the ball, you know, never more than 5 yards down the field. Couldn't be more than 5 yards down the field. Receivers can't run routes more than 5 yards down the field in that amount of time. I don't know why, like I said, I don't know if there's any one reason, because again, maybe Tom Brady wants it that way. Maybe we're trying to make up for maybe some limitations he's encountering. Maybe he doesn't want to be vulnerable in the pocket as much as he used to be willing to be able to. You could say, oh, our offensive line, but honestly, I know as badly as we run the ball, the Bucs' pass protection is not bad at all. It's not like they're getting blown up every pass. The Rams' pass protection, you saw that? That's bad pass protection. And the Bucs chowed down on that on Sunday, to the defense's credit. The Bucs' pass protection is not bad. It really is not. So I'm not saying, again, that you have to have these long, drawn-out, you know, we're going to drop back and slow-developing plays. I know Brady's always liked to get the ball out quick. But it's getting to the point of ridiculousness now. Look, just watching it, like, I mean, that ball touches his hands and it's gone. And, you know, I mean, guys, you just can't. You have to move the ball down the field. We know that. You have to move the ball down the field. Bucs don't move the ball down the field. Never mind that these are a lot of low percentage looks they're getting anyway into tight windows. But even if you complete them, I mean, you can't get the ball down the field that way. And, you know, run after the catch yards are only going to get you so far. So that is a very frustrating thing about the offense. And it's been something that's happened more than just the Rams game. But I noticed it especially in the Rams game. Yeah, I'm looking right here, okay? This is just regarding Nick Leverett, who I wanted to mention specifically because he's been pretty good since Luke Getteke was replaced, and I don't know why the Bucs coaching staff went with Getteke to begin with, but per Pro Football Focus, and I know some people poo-poo PFF, but whatever, okay? Per Pro Football Focus, this is a tweet courtesy of Evan Winter. Guard Nick Leverett owns the second-best pass-blocking grade on the team. He's allowed just one pressure in 129 pass blocking snaps. The only person better than him is Tristan Wirfs. All right? Who you'd expect. And I know it hasn't been a good... Donovan Smith's struggling a little bit this year. He's not having a good year. Hainsey's not bad. Obviously, they miss Jensen, but Hainsey's not bad. And Shaq Mason's not bad. The Bucs can pass pro. So let these guys run some routes down the field. And like I told you, I tweeted this. Yeah. I always hesitate. You know, if you never noticed my talk shows or my podcasts or whatever, I mean, it's anybody's job to be critical. But I always try to measure my criticism because I always hesitate to criticize people who have forgotten more about the topic at hand than I will ever know, which is the case with football and guys like Byron Leftwich and Todd Bowles and things like that. All right, they've forgotten more football than I'll ever know in my life. And I like to think I know a little bit of football, but still, I mean, you know, who the hell am I, you know? But like looking at like things like play action, the Bucs used to run play action really well, right? So I'm looking the other day, and this is before the Rams game actually. But Byron Leftwich, there was an article by Rick Stroud in the Tampa Bay Times about the headline was fans aren't the only ones scrutinizing Byron Leftwich's play calling. Even Harold Godwin, the you know run game coordinator and running backs coach, he was saying, hey, I don't call the plays, man. I wish we ran it more, blah, blah, blah. And that's not even what I'm talking about here, about running the ball. But Leftwich is quoted in there as saying, well, hey, you know, we can't do play action because our running game struggles, and everybody knows that that's what, you know, that's where play action flows out of the run game, and if you can't run the ball, you can't do play action. Okay, see, that right there is a red flag. Anybody charged with running an NFL offense who is purported to know as much about offensive football as any of these guys are, not just Byron Leftwich, should know, and this has been studied, okay, this isn't me saying it like I know everything, play action has nothing to do with how well you run the ball. And it's an old wives' tale that still, it sticks, man, because I hear people say it, like, oh, hey, play action, you got to set up the play action with the run. No, you can have the worst running game ever, which the Bucs apparently are close to, or you cannot even attempt to run the ball at all. Literally just mimicking the motion of handing the ball off. You know, linebackers have checks and reads. They have to honor it, okay? Literally just making that motion, even if you run the ball for 2.4 yards a carry, whatever the hell it is Fournette gets, even if you do that, you will have a more effective passing game because of that play action motion. I don't mean you do it every single play. I know you got, maybe you have to, you know, use it in spots, but the Bucs aren't using it at all, and it works. And to hear that the reason why they're not is because the person calling their plays thinks that they don't run the ball well enough to run play action, that's disappointing. That's, again, going back to what I said, that is an unforced error. That is us willfully hurting our chances and diminishing our own success by our own hand with no outside external forces doing it to us. I can almost live with, you know, a stud defensive lineman beating an offensive lineman because he's better, and that's why our offense doesn't work. At least then you just don't have the studs. But when you realize how much we're leaving on the table, it's maddening. And so when I look at this offense, and again, there are many, many issues. They miss Antonio Brown. They miss Rob Gronkowski. The offensive line, while not as bad as it's probably been reported, especially in pass blocking, it's probably not as good as it's definitely not as good as it was the past couple seasons. Okay? And even guys they have, Chris Godwin, and I love him. He's not all the way back. I mean, he's back, like he's literally back. He's playing, but he's not the same player this year. And he disappears for long stretches of time. They don't have the secondary receiving threat to Mike Evans that they used to. So there's all kinds of reasons in that lack of a running game. But yeah, that does play a part in it, absolutely. I mean, we all want to run the ball better. I'm not as big on the running game as a lot of people are. I don't think it's as important as a lot of people do. But, I mean, hell yes. Would you rather run the ball for 4 yards a carry or 2.5? Of course, four. No kidding. But it's all these different things. And then in addition to that, it's a different mentality at the top. Because I don't want to just be a simpleton and say, oh, you know, Arians good, Bowles bad. But I don't think the offense would look like this under Bruce Arians. I don't think he would allow it to. And it's a mentality. I'll give you an example. Before the half on Sunday, when the Rams had the ball, but there was time they weren't doing anything with it. They were about to punt. And we stopped them. And then we had timeouts. They're getting ready to punt. We let 40 seconds run off the clock. Didn't use one of our timeouts. 40 full seconds. And the Rams had to be on their sideline going, wow, I thought they'd call a timeout by now, but they're not. So let's run the play clock all the way down before we punt. Why didn't we call a timeout there? And it's because coaches like Todd Bowles don't think about point. They really don't. Like, for them, everything is conservative, close to the vest. Hey, let's play it safe. Let's let nothing bad happen. Our defense will get us through it. Like, scoring points is secondary. It's crazy to say it. It's crazy to think it's true. But it really is true. Like, that doesn't register in the brain of a coach like Todd Bowles. Like, when the Rams had the ball, like, on second down, an aggressive offensive-minded head coach is thinking, okay, if we stop them here, timeout. Okay, if we stop them again on third down, timeout. Let's get this ball back. That's going to leave us a minute 45, and then we can go down and try and get a quick field goal, maybe a touchdown. Like, any coach that's thinking about points is thinking about that well in advance. And I think Todd Bowles is just thinking, stop him. Stop him, get ball back, kneel, go halftime. Caveman shit. Get a timeout, save time, score. Maddening. It's maddening, okay? So I'm getting frustrated. And, you know, it's great that they won the game. It really is. It's great that they won the game. But this is not sustainable. I shouldn't even say it's not sustainable as if we've been sustaining because we only won one game. They've already, I mean, they've lost a handful of games already to Pittsburgh, to Carolina. Even the Baltimore game was winnable, although that one at least, you know, was a tougher opponent. But you get this one, I don't want to call it a fluke win, but a very, very fortunate win, and everything's right with the world? No, it's not. So you can email me or tweet with your thoughts. It's the same handle. BobbyGameDay@yahoo.com is the email address. On Twitter, it's @BobbyGameDay. Got a chance here to get it to 500 before the bye, of course, and that comes in Germany. It will be the first ever regular season game in Germany. They have played preseason games there. In fact, Todd Bowles played in one his 1 year with the 49ers. This one's in Munich. It'll be a 9:30 a.m. little morning start, which we've had before when the Bucks have played in London. It's been a few years, though. And so the best way to do it, honestly, is to go hang out with the Joe Bucks fan crew. It's Kegs and Eggs, the unofficial Bucks watch party. It's going to be a big storm brewing over in Clearwater. And starting at 9, the game starts at 9:30, but starting at 9, you can head over there. It's going to be breakfast, and then until 11, once it's 11, they'll have lunch. They're going to serve Bloody Mary, make your own, build your own Bloody Mary bar. Sounds like a lot of fun, all kinds of craft beer and stuff like that. They've got covered outdoor seating, indoor seating if you want that. The whole thing can be a ton of fun over there. The address for Big Storm Brewing, if you want the exact address, is 12707 49th Street North in Clearwater. And so that's a great way to do things. You know, you got a little bit of time. It's not like super early. Like if you're on the West Coast, these games start at 6:30 a.m. This is 9:30. Sleep in a little bit, head on out, and whether you're going to be at home or whatever, the game's on NFL Network, by the way, and watch the Bucks and the Seahawks, and hopefully they can get to 5-5 before the bye. And if they do that, and we got the Falcons playing tonight against the Panthers, I can't even believe that we're already at the point where we're watching other NFC South games, having to actually root against the Falcons, for Christ's sake, but that's where we're at. Although the Bucks don't need any scenarios, they still control their own destiny, as does everybody right now. But I guess it wouldn't hurt, unless you think Carolina can come up and nip them from behind. It wouldn't hurt if Atlanta lost. But anyway, it's a chance for the Bucks to get better. Now, this is a Seattle team that has surprised everybody. They weren't expected to be much before the season. Geno Smith has been really, really good. Give it to him. Hats off to him. And they've got Kenny Walker in the backfield back there. They are traveling 5,246 air miles and 9 time zones to get from Seattle to Germany. And once they do get there, like I said, the Bucks will be facing a team in Seattle that has won 4 in a row, or excuse me, 3 in a row and 4 of 5. And so, you know, as of right now, they're sitting atop the NFC West. I'm a big believer. This is just me. But I'm a big believer in standings correction, maybe is the term. So, like, when I'm looking to pick games, like, if I'm, like, making picks, I make my picks every week in a picks league with my buddies against the spread. And one of the things I always do, and I know it seems simplistic, but I look at the records of the teams, not to see which team has a better record, but, for example, you've got the 6-3 Seahawks and the 4-5 Buccaneers. So, does Seattle feel more like a 7-3 team or a 6-4 team? And do the Bucks feel more like a 5-5 team or a 4-6 team? In both cases here, I think it favors the Bucks. Seattle feels a lot more like a 6-4 team than a 7-3. I mean, 7-3 for them, really? And conversely for the Bucks, you know, they feel even as poorly as they've played, they feel like a 5-5 team more than a 4-6 team. So again, I know just feeling something doesn't get it done, and if it did, I'd go to Vegas. I wouldn't have to do anything else but that. But, like I said, standings correction, regression to the mean. It's just another way of saying regression to the mean. I feel like when you look at some of these games, you know, and same thing with the Falcons-Panthers tonight, just to throw a random game out there, and you can, by the time you guys hear this, this game will probably already have been played, so you can check me on it. But Falcons are 4-5, Panthers are 2-7. You know, that feels like Panthers 3-7, Falcons 4-6, right? More so than Falcons 5-5, Panthers 2-8. A little bit. I mean, I don't think either of them are very good. Like the Vikings are another one. The Vikings this week are playing the Bills, okay? So you look at the numbers. Vikings are 7-1, Bills are 6-2. Bills don't feel like a 6-3 team, as good as they're supposed to be. That's a 7-2 team. And my gosh, the Vikings are certainly not an 8-1 team. They're more of a 7. They're actually more of a 6-3 or 5-4 team. But either way, That's what I mean when I talk about regression to the mean or standings correction or things like that. But with that said, getting back to the game on Sunday morning. Oh, I forgot to even mention, yeah, we got a little strife at running back, right? So now we got Fournette, who got a little pissy that he got taken out of the game there toward the end of the first half. And Rashad White took the carries on that last drive of the first half, and I think Keyshawn Vaughn had one. And either way, you know, everybody's like, well, Rashad White's outplayed Leonard Fournette, and he has. And I think Rashad White should get more carries. But let's not act like this is some, like, oh, my gosh, Rashad White's clearly the guy now. Neither of them has done anything much. I mean, Rashad White looks a little more shifty, a little more escapability, a little more explosiveness. And with these running backs, they run hot and cold. They come and go. Like, nobody should ever get enamored with a running back to the point where, like, he's the guy, or depending on how much money they make or where they were drafted. In any given span of a few weeks, it could all change. And they're interchangeable. So, fine, let's ride Rashad White for a while. But again, he's only averaging like 4 yards, like a little under 4 yards, something like that. Fournette's down at like 2.5. So there's that. The defense, as good as it has been, okay, has gone now 5 full games without a takeaway. The NFL record is 6 by the 2018 49ers. So if the Bucs don't get one here, and Seattle is prone to them. Seattle allows 12 or gives up 12 turnovers, has given up 12 turnovers so far this season. That's 10th most in the NFL. So you got to figure. And we'll see about the injury status of guys like Antoine Winfield. I know he's still going through the concussion protocol, missed last week's game. But you got to figure the Bucs find a way to come up with something. I mean, even just besides interceptions, fumbles, as random as they are, something will happen, you would like to think. But it hasn't happened yet. And until it does, the Bucs are, again, a chance to tie the NFL record if they don't get one this Sunday against Seattle. Looking at some of the other injuries, not even injuries, but like Nick Leverett is a little bit of an illness, they're saying. He should be fine. And the team is leaving for Germany as we speak, as I record this. So I don't know if anybody's getting left behind or anything like that. They're set to leave this afternoon. And again, by the time you listen to this, they should be in Germany. And we'll know a little bit more. But nothing major. Obviously, Winfield's the big one. Hope he gets out of concussion protocol and gets in there. So check out on Sunday if you want to check it out. I think it'd be a great idea if you're looking for something to do and get in more of a communal atmosphere. The address is in Clearwater, 12707 49th Street North. Once more, indoor seating, outdoor covered seating, build your own Bloody Mary station, breakfast, lunch starts at 11, Florida's best craft beer. There's going to be giveaways, the whole thing. Starts at 9 a.m., games at 9:30, and you can go all the way through. Should be a ton of fun. Also, I want to thank our good friends over at Bill Curry Ford. If you're looking for a vehicle, brand new, pre-owned, car, truck, van, whatever it is, check them out. Everything you get there has got the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, so any car you buy from Bill Curry Ford is covered right out the door for any engine trouble for as long as you still own the car. It could be several years. Doesn't matter. No big deal. You don't have to worry about hearing a sound or something going wrong. It's all taken care of. And go see all the inventory they've got. The no haggle, transparent online pricing is all there at the website, BillCurryFord.com. That's C-U-R-R-I-E, BillCurryFord.com. Or go see them a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry Highway. So with all that said, here's to the weekend. Maybe you have a long weekend with Veterans Day. Always want to remember our veterans. That's on Friday. I know some people have still to work. Some people don't have to work. My kids are off school. And they were actually off school Thursday as well with the storm. So it turns out being a four-day weekend. That's fine. You know, I get it. Hopefully nobody's got too bad of people are listening to this all over. But in the Tampa Bay area, nothing was too bad, I don't think, besides some debris cleanup if you have oak trees around. So hopefully everybody came out of the whole thing unscathed. Thank you to the Joes for giving me this opportunity and giving me this platform. Joe Bucks Fan, the best place on the internet anywhere for Buccaneer coverage. And then always, thanks to you guys for listening. I appreciate it. Have a great weekend. Again, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com is the email address, and on Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameDay. Check out Joe Bucks Fan on Twitter, at Joe Bucks Fan, for all the coverage. We got a man in Munich, of course, so you're going to get all kinds of news and pictures coming back from there. But again, Big Storm Brewery, a lot of fun on Sunday morning as well. Check that out. Whatever you do, though, and wherever you are, be safe, have fun. We'll come back for the bye week, hopefully talking about a 5-5 team with a little bit more of an optimistic outlook on things. Until then, though, Have a great weekend and be safe and have tons of fun. And I'll be back. And no matter where you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks. You won't belong to me, I'll let you die.